Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Today's program will be another in my health challenges series. My guest is Cheryl Sinco. Sinco has been a photographer since age 16 and co-founded her own professional photography business in 1993, 3 years after moving to Ithaca from San Francisco. Her projects range from commercial and advertising work to portraiture and special events. In 1995, after a routine yearly medical checkup, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She had a bilateral mastectomy and no chemo, as well as reconstructive surgery. In the late summer of 2012, she again confronted a health crisis and was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. We'll talk about Sinco's personal journey on today's program. And welcome and thank you.
Thank you for doing the program, Tish.
Now, you say that you were doing all the right things as far as you were concerned, monitoring your health. You got a baseline mammogram at a relatively young age of 35. And then 5 years later, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. Tell us about this journey that started with this.
Well, I was actually on a trip to California when I came down with a terrible flu. I had just turned 40, and I came home with every intention of having my first real checkup as opposed to the baseline. And when I went to Planned Parenthood at the time, the nurse practitioner said, "Did you know you had lumpy breasts?" And I said, "No, I've been checked and I've never heard that before." It was, in fact, the nurse practitioner that followed up to make sure that I had scheduled a mammogram. And unfortunately, during the mammogram, I was told, not very gently, that I had better immediately go see a gynecologist or a surgeon because something looked suspicious. I had a new business, relatively new, who was a year old with a partner, and I had a strong medical history in terms of having gone to doctors, as we've mentioned before. I decided to go to a teaching hospital. I didn't want to go back to Philadelphia, where my family is from, because of the business. And I went, and I was assured that it was just probably a routine, nothing was the matter, but everything just started spinning out of control from there. And at the time, too, and this, again, is in 1995, so we're talking 20 years ago, I was asked if I wanted to participate in a study called a Sistemibi study. And, of course, I wanted to help other people if my diagnosis was not good. A lot of things weren't clearly explained to me. I think they were more concerned about having me participate in the study. And midway through the test, I was informed that I was going to have to be re-mammogrammed on both sides of my breasts. Now, I'm going to jump back for a minute and just tell you that I had a biopsy and there was a problem on my left side. I actually decided not to go through with this study because I didn't want to mammogram a good breast.
Oh, I don't blame you for that.
I was concerned about the radiation, you know, and that was a little bit traumatic. In any event, I went through with everything and we scheduled a lumpectomy. And a few days after the results came through, it was discovered that I had a second form of cancer in that left side. And the recommendation was to at least have a single mastectomy. I did a lot of research. I have friends that are physicians all over the country, so I was checking with people. In between that time, I developed an infection, and I had to have the infection drained, and so I had a significantly large hole in my chest.
And this is so unbelievable.
Yeah. And that had to heal before I could make a decision, or I could make the decision, but before I could have surgery. I went to acupuncture. I was doing alternative medicine. Actually, from the beginning, when I first discovered that there was a problem, I started doing something called ESIAC that friends of mine would make for me. You know, so I believe in using...
What is ESIAC? Was it a drug? Tell people what that is.
Okay, no.
I mean, you don't have to go into
detail.
It's
not a drug. It's a series of herbs. You can actually get a bottled version at Green Star. But my friends were getting it out of a pharmacy in New York City. Mm-hmm. And so they were making it, preparing it for me. And that, along with whatever my, you know, regular doctor was telling me, I was doing. So I was doing everything that I possibly could. I was still doing Tai Chi and doing African dance and trying to relax.
Oh, that must have been a challenge.
It was. It definitely was.
So you ended up having a double mastectomy, right?
Well, I do want to say that I couldn't decide what to do, whether to have a single or a double. I had a massage, and she took me into another state, and I had even talked to a psychic But it was the massage that somehow I got down to my inner voice, and it said, go ahead and do it. So I did. That was in July of 1995.
Let me just say that you got the double mastectomy, but didn't have to have chemo, right? Was that one of the stipulations and one of the reasons?
That was one
reasons?
Of my stipulations.
Yeah.
I went into all of this telling the oncologist and the doctor that I was not a fan of chemo. But I was open-minded and listened to what they said. It was my oncologist that said because of, you know, the results from the test, he agreed with me. Now, the plastic surgeon, who was not an oncologist, tried to push me into having chemo. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So in July of 95, I had the bilateral mastectomy.
Wow. That's such an amazing story. What you had to go through just to get to that point is amazing to me. Now, you say that you found great support from the Cancer Resource Center. Tell us about support, how much it's needed, how much you found, and tell us what your experience was. You couldn't have done this all alone,
right? I did not. No,
yeah.
And I have many people to thank. And actually, back then, it was the Ithaca Breast Cancer Alliance. And I can't remember exactly how old they were, a year or two. But thank God for Andy Gladstone. I mean, she would let me call in any time of day or night and just leave a message on the machine if I was scared, if I was concerned. Now, I'm not recommending that you do that now. It's a much larger organization, and they're still just as wonderful. But I did have a support network of family and friends. I do have to say that there were people that were more freaked out than I was. And, I mean, this is my experience and my opinion. When someone is going through this kind of diagnosis, you know, if people offer to help and then you tell them what you need and they can't help, then you got to move on.
Mm.
I mean, at least I did. I couldn't take care of anybody else. I needed to really take care of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that was hard. And, you know, there were some people that fell by the wayside, but go ahead.
Almost everybody I've talked to about any kind of health challenge they've had, people leave because they're so afraid of somebody being sick or not knowing what to say.
Or catching it.
Or catching it or not knowing who they become in your circle of friends, who you may become. It's a universal story, isn't it?
Yes.
Gosh,
yes.
That it's so amazing to me. Now, talk to me about how important you think it is to be able to be an advocate for yourself. In other words, people should do the research. Don't just listen to one opinion. Tell us.
It's incredibly important. And in fact, I know that I became known as a problem patient back then because I kept asking questions. Now, I always had somebody with me.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much it was friends or family. So another pair of ears is always really important, especially going through an emotional situation like this. But I did ask a lot of questions and did challenge some things that were said to me. And I'm glad that I did. However, I didn't challenge enough in the sense that through the years, and even back 20 years ago, I asked to be tested, genetically tested. And the doctor at the time said, why bother? You already know that you have breast cancer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In all fairness, back then, although I've since seen other reports, they didn't really know about the correlation between breast and ovarian. So I can't get too upset about that. Although,
but that
I
does
sometimes
run through your whole narrative about your illness, about how you kept saying you wanted to see if you had that particular gene that give you a propensity.
Correct.
To also have ovarian cancer. And, yeah. And they kept putting you off.
They put me off. It was too expensive. The test was difficult to get. I mean, 20 years ago, 18 years ago, 15 years ago, leading up to my recent diagnosis. And I did ask, and there was a bunch of confusion over when I could have the test. I mean, I was always told that it was a blood test. Ironically, when I was diagnosed, or when I thought that there was a problem, right after I came back from South America and did the Inca Trail, I asked for the test again, and it got put off. We finally made an appointment at the end of August of 2012, and I had a normal exam in July of 2012, even though I wasn't feeling right, but I had no
suspicion. You still went on your trip in August.
Yeah, I went on the trip. Yeah. The trip, I had some kind of flu right before I went, the month before I left. And then when I was in South America, things just didn't feel right, but I thought it was the altitude.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was 14,000 feet above sea level, and, you know, at some points. It was my family physician who, knowing that I had had an okay exam in July of 2012, she detected something, immediately sent me back to my oncological gynecologist, and that's when we discovered that I was in trouble.
That you had ovarian cancer.
Yeah. And I will say, I remember the dates. August 26th was when I saw the doctor. August 29th when I was supposed to be tested. Now, I will say that my brother, as soon as he found out, he went ahead and got tested. He had a swab. Now, he came from a big city. I don't know whether there's a difference there or not.
Can I ask you this, though, Cheryl? What would be the point of knowing that at that point? I mean, what would you have done with that information if you'd found out you had the gene?
If I had found out, I would have had a hysterectomy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So
and I could have avoided a stage 3A diagnosis and chemo, probably.
Yeah.
And maybe there still would have been some cancer in me, but I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to think not.
So that would have been the information that would have given you that choice. I was wondering what it would have mattered. Now, when you were diagnosed with ovarian cancer just a couple of years ago, just in 2012, were you totally healthy from the breast cancer?
Yes.
As far as you knew?
Yes.
And so you were living a healthy life, going back on your normal routines, everything was normal, and then you get this diagnosis of ovarian cancer.
Yes.
Tell us what happened after that. You ended up having to have chemo.
Yes, I had what's called an oophorectomy, which was everything was removed, and fortunately nothing was in any other organ. And I had to have 18 weeks of chemo. And as good as the doctors were, there are a lot of things that they don't tell you. My nurses were amazing. But again, it was because a friend of mine has cancer that I knew about the neuropathy that probably could result at the end of chemo treatment in my hands and my feet.
Oh, gosh.
And I still have, you know, remnants of it. And I do remember saying to the doctor, my oncological gynecologist at the time, when they discovered something was the problem, I said to her, you have a hard sell for me, on me for chemo. And when she came back with the information, she said, you can think about it. And I knew right away. I said, no, let's just go ahead and do it and do the most extreme. Do what you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did they have to do chemo for this particular cancer and not with the breast, even though they had done the surgery? And
ovarian cancer is extremely deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still have a port in me. And
so it's a preventative step in many ways.
Yeah. I guess. And I do a lot of acupuncture.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Cheryl Sinco. We're talking about her cancer journey. She was diagnosed with breast cancer and with ovarian cancer many years after that. You point out that a pap smear that women are told to have, you know, every few years, every year, whatever the time frame is, doesn't detect ovarian cancer.
No.
Tell us what symptoms somebody might find for ovarian cancer, since there aren't any tests. What are ways of women to prevent that? Or,
you know, if they're not feeling well, I mean, I know that I was sluggish. I know that, you know, my whole digestive system was a little bit off, but I just, you know, going through menopause, I thought all of these pieces were part of the puzzle. And I think the doctors don't fully know. I mean, that's what's so difficult about ovarian cancer, is that it's hard to detect.
Yeah.
But I can say that if anyone has any doubt or any question or wants to have genetic testing, and I don't remember whether I said this or not, but my brother had a mouth swab. It was a simple test.
Yeah, you mentioned that. So it is a simple test. Even if it's a blood test, if it's going to save your life.
Right, exactly.
I think you
and the insurance industry would have saved a whole bunch of money.
If you've been able to have that test. Now you did have to have chemo, as we've been talking about. Tell us how that felt for you. I mean, we always hear about nightmares, about how it debilitates you and makes you ill. How did you kept working is what I'm getting at. How did you do this?
Well, you have your good days and your bad days, and it progressively gets worse and you become weaker. However, again, I strongly believe in pairing alternative medicine with traditional medicine, and I went to my acupuncturist regularly. I took some supplements. I didn't take a gazillion pills, but she's brilliant, so I can say her name, Mary Lee Murphy.
Sure.
And that kept me going and strong. And also, I think it helped me not, I never had thrush, which is mouth sores, and I didn't have that at all. I was very lucky because I had the extreme form of chemo that in two different locations.
Oh, that sounds...
Yeah, it was awful.
Unbelievable, yeah.
But watching comedies and helped a lot. You know, you have to laugh. And I do remember even, you know, talking to some of the other women in the chemo room and going through it is just having some kind of a dialogue or relationship with people that were going through something similar help. And also, I mean, I had wonderful clients. I felt tired, but, you know, we scheduled things when I could, you know, was feeling up to it. But I pretty much did work through everything, you know, during the whole time.
I wanted to ask this. Do you have faith in your life? Did you have some kind of spiritual practice that helped you through this? How did you keep your hope alive?
That's a good question. I think that through the love and support of so many people, I mean, we not only was the Cancer Resource Center there, but we set up a website so people could sign up and help called Lots of Helping Hands. And there are a couple different, there's Caring Bridge that are very helpful. You know, did I pray? Maybe. My own way. I have my own way of having faith. Culturally, I am Jewish. But unfortunately, I found out that there's a lot of cancer in my culture.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was diagnosed with breast cancer and there was this whole discussion about Eastern European Jews, and I actually challenged a doctor that came down to talk about that because I didn't know whether statistically more people went to the doctor and what were the facts. I don't know. I mean, she got rather upset with me when I asked the question. So, and I find that a lot. But, you know, I'm trying to think back now because I don't remember a lot. I think I blocked a lot out. Did a lot of sleeping.
Yeah. Well, chemotherapy can do stuff to your head, too, right? I mean, in regard to remembering exactly what you might
that
have been.
That and menopause are great. But the menopause...
Surprised you made it here today.
Where am I? No.
I want to ask you this, too. Did your Western medicine people try to talk you out of non-traditional medicine? How did that work? I've met doctors who say, go ahead, it's not going to hurt you. Other ones say, don't bother, you're wasting your time, you know?
Well, this will make a lot of people angry, but I remember getting a second opinion from a doctor, not in the area, in the immediate area, who said to me, when I was talking about alternative things, she said to me, well, you know how those people in Ithaca are.
Yeah.
I mean, that I have many stories like that, but I just disregarded that. And
so the airy-fairy
right, exactly.
reputation lives everywhere.
Of alternative, yes. Wait, say that again. What was the question?
No, I was going to ask you what your Western medical people thought about non-traditional. Did they try to talk you out of it?
No, and I do remember when I was in the hospital with breast cancer, I had a lot of supplements even back then, and I think back then it was blue-green algae that people were taking, and they came in and were poo-pooing that, the staff there. But it's come a long way. I mean, I've gotten support from, you know, certainly from the oncological team, and, you know, they say anything, you know, if it works, if it helps you, go for it.
So. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they use placebos in almost all medical testing anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, and most traditional medicines come from herbs and natural ingredients. It's just that the pharmaceutical companies haven't gotten a hold of them and made big money off them, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, my cynicism about that, too, you know, discouraging things that actually are affordable. is an amazing
well,
thing.
Well, that article that was just in the paper about that, yeah.
To tell us how this whole 20-year journey that you've been on to try to save your life essentially has changed your life. Have you noticed that it has changed you in any way?
Probably other people who knew me or know me could answer that a little better than me.
Because it started when you were 40. I mean, you were already an established adult personhood,
right.
You know.
Well, I do want to say that one thing that really helped me to get through the beginning back 20 years ago, because there was no history in my family. Mm-hmm. And until my brother was, you know, I took photographs of myself. I didn't set anything up. I just picked up a camera, you know, if it was grainy, whatever. I just was trying to document.
Photographs of yourself during the stages during the process?
Right.
Mm.
And Has it changed me? I always love to travel, so I do a lot of traveling when I can. I think this last bout, I feel a little more cautious about things, but I wonder if that's not about getting older, too. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know for sure, or I can't really give you a specific answer.
Yeah.
You know, I try to be as positive as I can, and I don't always succeed, but I do know that it's been really important, too, to work.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And working as an independent and as an individual can sometimes be difficult.
Yeah.
And there, you know, I have less patience for people's BS.
I've heard people say that before, too. You know, let's get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
We know our time is limited. You know, even though I dodged the bullet this time, we're all going to die at some point.
Right.
You know? Do people who have had cancer once and then you've had it twice, which to me is remarkable that you're still in one piece, do you feel anxiety a lot about any little thing that's going on with you? Like, my stomach hurts. Oh, my God.
I don't feel anxiety. I think about it a little bit, but I don't dwell on it. And I never did, even way back when. I mean, I guess at a young age, I confronted death with, you know, relatives that were close to me. You know, my parents never hid things in that way from me. So I have a relatively healthy attitude towards facing, you know, death.
Mm-hmm. I would say facing
fatality.
Reality, too.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, ultimate fatality, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How has this changed you as a photographer? Do you feel more of an urgency to record your life and to record what's around you?
You know, photography, being a photographer can be a very isolating profession.
Especially when people sat in dark rooms, right?
Exactly. And I've recently established some close ties with a couple of other women who have gone through similar, not the same, but similar health issues. And it's fun working together with people. I actually always like to work with people, but because of the nature of photography, you don't always, you work with your client, you work maybe with an assistant or whatever, but doing joint projects, I enjoy doing them and I want to pursue doing them more and more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're part of the State of the Art Gallery too, which
yes.
is part of a collective, and you work with people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and how did some of your colleagues react to your breast cancer, especially the second bout?
Well, the first go around, you mean in terms
I'm in terms of support, like people at the State of the Art Gallery.
Well,
so some of the people that you work with as an artist, as a photographer,
very helpful. People, some people visited me in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
People would check in, or they would sign up on the Lots of Helping Hands. I can tell you that I know from other people this didn't necessarily happen to me, but when you hear about a cancer diagnosis, some people can be pretty cruel and say things, inappropriate things. And
yeah, because so, they just don't know, they stumble over themselves, right?
Or they can say, I heard so-and-so had this diagnosis, are they going to live?
Yeah.
I mean, that can be dangerous in terms of a profession.
Yeah.
You don't say that kind of stuff. So I guess I would urge people to think before they speak. We don't always do it. I don't always do it. But it's important to keep it in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are a lot of people out there with a lot of different issues.
There's a lot of illness out there, which mm-hmm. is remarkable to me in this modern world where modern medicine was supposed to make us all almost robotically healthy.
Yeah.
It seems like we're making things worse in some ways with environmental challenges and everything else.
Well, see, I always believed when I was first diagnosed, too, when I was 16, I was 17, when I was working on a kibbutz in Israel, and I sprayed pesticides.
Mm.
And again, the doctor, oh, no, that's not it at all. But I still don't know. I mean, I probably do have, some kind of a gene similar to my brother.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I still don't know.
I know. A lot of people I've talked to who have had cancer have thought very, very specifically that it came from environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they would almost swear to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably a good guess.
Right.
You know, So what would you say to somebody who was diagnosed with cancer right now? What are the first steps they should do? What should they do?
Find people that support you. Use all the resources available in this community. The Cancer Resource Center is the perfect place to go. And ask questions. And if you feel like you're being condescended to or you're not getting information, well, now with the internet the way it is, too, you can find things, but that can be dangerous.
Yeah, it can.
So ask a lot of people.
Go to real sites like Mayo Clinic, and, you know, that's what I would tell people to do.
And if you need a second opinion or a third opinion, do it.
Yeah, and support and information are to what I would tell anybody with any kind of an illness. Mm-hmm. Support and what do you have planned for the future? Do you feel like you're totally healthy now, or are you moving on with your life just like you
totally
did?
Healthy? You know, I do Pilates. That's another thing that saved me during some of this the past few years. I have a couple trips planned, and, you know, I'm planning to work as much as I can and collaborate as much as I can. You know, just keep moving forward.
We only have a couple minutes. You mentioned that you were taking pictures of yourself, taking pictures of your illness in some ways. Do you think you'll ever exhibit that?
Actually, I did have a portfolio up at the Johnson Museum a number of years ago. I was asked during Breast Cancer Awareness Month whether I'll go revisit it, because I just have stacks of images, because it was back in the day when you used film. So if it's helpful, I did it, like I said, to help myself get through it and to confront what I was about, you know, what was going on with my body. But at the time, there weren't pictures to look at. It seemed like as soon as I was diagnosed, then everybody started documenting.
Oh, themselves. Yeah. You see all kinds of exhibits of women with breast cancer and mastectomy photos and stuff. Yeah.
And we did a project back in 2002 or 2003 called Facing Breast Cancer in Our Community. And it was a series of photographs I took of women in the community that were looking into a mirror. And coupled with that were some statements that they made, or poetry. So that was a successful exhibit. It just wasn't of me.
You know, as somebody who's an artist and a photographer, I would say it's really important to have the arts and illness working together so that people won't be so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl Sinkel, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us anything about what's happening? You've got a cancer walk coming up.
Yes. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. But the walkathon, I think the date is the 26th of October. I have a small group we've walked before called Intrepid Travelers. If anyone wants to join us to raise funds and have a fun walk, just go to the Cancer Resource Center website. I can't tell you right off the top of my
head. Oh, that's okay. People can find that, yeah, and they'll be able to join you. And join in the walk, even if you don't want to connect with Cheryl and her friends. It's a very important fundraising venture for trying to get rid of cancer, which we've been trying to do all of our lives.
Yes.
Cheryl Sinkel, thank you for joining us. Good luck in the future, and we wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.